Count it a privilege to greet you this morning in the name of a prophet and priest and king that we just heard a devotional about. It was so beautiful as I think of him as the prophet that came with a message, as the priest who came with the privilege of reconciliation with God, and as the king who is in total authority, and as the one who introduces to us himself as creator and also as judge, first and the last. I just thank the Lord for that beautiful passage our brother read. I really want to sing a song yet today, but I feel like that clock's against me. But I want to sing a song today, through the day. It's an old familiar song. It's in your books. It's 441 in the one we sang out of this morning. And I'd like us to just stand and at least sing the first verse together. Our chorister could give me the pitch. Lord, give us Christian homes. And I want us to sing this as a prayer. We need to be praying that today. Every one of us needs to catch a vision of what God wants for his people in the home. So may you stand, and could I have the pitch?
Oh, Lord, give us Christian homes, homes where the Bible is loved and taught, homes where the Master's will is sought, homes drawn with new divine love and wrought.
One of the first times I preached in this church, Brother Aaron was sitting right there, where Brother Darwin is. And I felt pretty small to have my bishop for years, Brother Aaron Shank, who I highly respected, sitting there while I preached. But it was a blessing to sit, to have him sitting there and to have his response later. And he came with a response. He had a short little poem he wrote and challenged me in terms of using the word I versus we when we pray. And I've never forgotten it. Never forgotten it. That little note he gave me, I have sitting in my Bible at home, handwritten by him. Bless my heart as I think of it. This morning, we are gathered here. And we want God to speak to each of us. And as I think of the subject, youth shouting for the battle, and the theme, is there not a cause? This thought of a battle has really gripped my heart as I think of it. And as I think of the generation in which we're living, and I think of the selfishness in which men's hearts are set on, and the call of the scriptures like we heard about in our Sunday school lesson, and the call of the scriptures like we heard about in our devotions, that is a call that is totally, totally different from what you will go if you take your own way, and if you just listen to yourself. And here in the passage that my mind went to because of the title, Is There Not a Cause? We know that that question is raised by David in 1 Samuel 17, and I love the passage, 1 Samuel 17. I would love to take the time to read it here this morning later, but I'm not sure I will for sake of time, but I love the passage. I love the vision that David had. But prior to this, in verse 20, We find the host was going forth to fight and shouted for the battle. And this had been going on for 40 days, or a little while, 30 days at least, been going on, shouting for the battle. Now, I want to ask you a question. When in the past had Israel fought a battle when they were commanded not to shout, and then later on commanded to shout?
Jericho.
What?
Jericho.
That's right, Jericho. There they were. They silently marched around that city 7 days, and then seven times, right? And then they shouted, and what happened? The walls fell down, and I just marvel at that. I marvel at that. The power of God displayed when they followed God. And it's still true today that God's presence and power is effective in the lives of those people who surrender to Him and do what He asks. You want to live for God, you have to surrender to God. We heard that this morning. Now, why in that battle were they not afraid of the enemy? But in this battle, they are. What was the difference? They marched around Jericho, they went around there, and they shouted, and the walls fell down, and they went in and conquered the city. But here, these men went to the battle, Israel shouted, and there was fear. Out came a champion, and they were afraid. I think it is interesting to notice that the Spirit of the Lord had departed from Saul, but the Spirit of the Lord was with Joshua. And there was a direct difference in what happened there that day in those camps because of who was leading, if I should say that. And that's a challenge to me, that the Spirit of the Lord would be alive in my heart, that I could be an effective leader where God asked me to lead. There's another scene where Israel fights with the Philistines, and they go forth to battle there in 1 Samuel 4. And the first time they went out, 4,000 men are slain, and they're asking, Lord, why did this, you know, what's wrong? What's wrong? So they decide to take the ark with them to the battle, right? And as soon as that ark came there and they came to the battle, they all shouted so loud, the Philistines were like, whoa, what is going on now? And we know their response. They said, let's rally ourselves like men because God's come out into the camp, this God of Israel. And they went to battle that day, and Israel had 30,000 men slain. A sad commentary. The Ark of God didn't save them, did it? The Ark of God didn't save them. And as I think of that, a sober challenge that I see in this, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. This morning, youth, you cannot win in this battle unless you align yourselves with God and righteousness. Youth shouting for the battle must align ourselves with God and His principles of truth. And as I think of a battle, I think of a number of questions, or a number of facts, I should say. A battle portrays to me the reality of opposition, an opposing force. The Christian home today faces real opposition. The world says you don't even need to get married. You just live together and see if you like it. Soldiers need to be willing to die for the cause at stake. Am I willing to stand for truth even unto death? We're not used to that in our setting. But Peter says, he talks about that, trial of your faith being much more precious than of gold, though it be tried with fire, as some of them faced a fiery death. What does a battle portray? It portrays conflict, not an easy life. What does a battle portray? It portrays that I will need to deny myself to be a good soldier. Self-denial is crucial for spiritual victory. You catch that? Self-denial is crucial for spiritual victory. Paul talks about it, 1 Timothy 2, about being a good soldier. What does a battle portray? I need to listen well to and fully trust in my commander. Can you imagine that? Going out to battle and trusting the commander. Trusting the commander. And if he tells me to do the wrong thing, my life is at stake. But I trust him, right? It's to put myself in that situation. It involves trust. And so in 1 Samuel 17, the reason David succeeded in winning here in this battle is because he trusted his commander. He fully trusted him. And I marvel at the level of trust that was in him as a youth, as he trusted the commander. What does a battle portray? My input or lack of will affect others. And this story so vividly portrays that. David's input affected the whole camp. Affected the whole camp. Then they rallied and went forward once he had gone out and dealt with Goliath. Winning this battle will take combined efforts and lots of endurance. You know, life goes by a day at a time. But each day we make a choice. And tomorrow we make another choice. And the next day we make another choice. And as we continually choose to follow God, there's an outcome. There's a blessing. And if we do otherwise, we find that it doesn't work that way. But each day I have to make the choice, will I love God today? Will I love him today? Will I serve my family today? Or will I serve myself? I have those choices every day. What does the battle portray? I must take my accountability and responsibility seriously. I am accountable. I am responsible in some area, and I must take it seriously. And the fact is, my choices today carry far-reaching effects in the future. They could even affect my destiny, my choices today. What does the battle portray? I need to be personally acquainted with the armor I'm using. I can't win hanging on to the untried and unproven apron strings, as you might say it. I need to personally know God. I need to make God personal in my life. Was Saul's armor bad? No. But David didn't take it. Why? Because it wasn't something he was familiar with. Was his sword no good? No. But David hadn't used them before, and so he didn't take them. And I'm just impressed as I think of all that. Today it takes strong faith in God to live for God, to stand on his word, to rest in his promises, and not be swayed by those who compromise or scoff about living righteously in this adulterous generation. I say it takes strong faith. And I'm glad that God is able to help weak faith become strong as he works in our lives. You know, he looked at the disciples there that day when the sea was rough and tempestuous, the waves were coming over, and they were like, Master, help us, or we perish. Why are you so fearful? Well, if you've ever been out on a boat, I'd have been scared too. Why are you so fearful? I'm here. That was the message he was saying. I'm here. I'm here. Put your faith in me. So we know the story in 1 Samuel 17 as Israel's gathered to battle. Saul is there and his men, and out comes his champion, who is really tall. A big man, a big sword, well armored, defying the armies of Israel. Defying them and saying, give me a man to come fight with me. And he just does that day in and day out. And every time this happens, Israel's soldiers are fearfully backing up, as it were. But they're on one mountain versus another mountain, okay? So this is happening with them on one mountain and the Philistines on the other mountain and the valley between. The valley between. And here's this warrior defying Israel. And David had been with Saul. He had been playing the harp there when Saul was caught with that evil spirit to help Saul. And he's sent back home, according to verse 15. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. He's sent back home, and he's not here at the battle. He's back there keeping sheep. When he had a position that was a little bit better than that, you might say, not serving those sheep out in the wilderness, but able to be in the king's presence, now he's sent back to take care of the sheep. And then his father says, I need you to go take this to your brothers. Go with this, take this to your brothers. David leaves the sheep with a keeper. He goes and he comes to the army and he brings this food to his brothers. And he hears he sees what is happening there that day. And he hears what the men tell him as he asks questions in terms of all this. And there's David. Willing, he's like, well, what's the issue? Putting it in my own words, why not deal with this man? Because he's defying the armies of Israel. The God of Israel. And that was who he saw. His focus was on the God of Israel that this Philistine was defying. And so the words that David say are repeated to Saul. And Saul asks for him. He comes there and Saul, and he's willing to testify how God had been with him in the past. And he's willing to testify of his readiness to go to this battle. His readiness to go out there and fight with this champion. And Saul wants to put on him his armor and make him equipped for it. Because he's like, this man's a proven soldier. You can't just go out there without something. And David tries and it's not what he wants. So he goes out there. I'm going to say, with faith in God. And he had in his defense the best armor there is. The best armor there is. Went out there with faith in God and his sling and those five stones. And he even believed he was going to win, that God was going to be vindicated that day before he ever got there. And I marvel at that. So what was that? It was a living faith. If God could keep me safe when I dealt with the lion and the bear, God will help me here. You see, it wasn't something that started this day. It was something that had been happening in his life. And it helped him as he faces this. Well, I want to divide the message into four sections. First thing I want to think about is the choice to be in the battle for right. The choice to be in the battle for right. Dear youth today, do you want to be in the battle for right? Do you want to be in the battle for right? You must answer that question because that's the basis for being a blessing in this world and being able to be a blessing to the Christian home. If we're willing and wanting and ready to be in the battle for truth, for right, for God's kingdom, for God's cause, for the blessing of righteousness, for the hope of eternal life, all that. If we're willing, David knew who he was going to follow and serve. In verse 17, there he is. He's ready to run to the camp. And yes, but in verse 32, what does he say? Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. He knew who he was going to follow and serve. He was not going to be the uncircumcised Philistine servant. Notice verse 9, if he be able to, the Philistine Goliath saying this, if he be able to fight with me and kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight. David knew he was not going to be the uncircumcised Philistine servant. Youth, have you done this? Have you committed yourself to not be a part of the world and servitude to the devil and servitude to the flesh? We must. We must. We must choose this day whom we will serve. That's at the crux of this. Is there not a cause? The reason David fully understood this is he had yielded himself to the God who was the cause to stand with. And dear youth, you must have that fixed in your minds. The choice needs to be made again and again to identify with this God, to know who you are going to follow. Will you identify with the people of God? If we identify with God, we identify with the people of God. It's hand in hand. And David was fully identified with the God of Israel that day in Israel. He viewed him as his brethren. He was there in defense of the God of Israel, and he realized that giant was defying the armies of Israel, the God of Israel. So I say, will you identify with the people of God? Have you done this? Have you chosen whom you will serve? Second thing I notice about the choice to be in the battle for right, David had personal convictions based on truth he lived his life by. In verse 20, he was obedient to his father. He went and he got up. He rose up early in the morning. He left the sheep with a keeper and took and went as Jesse commanded him. He was obedient to his father. He took all his personal responsibilities seriously. He left those sheep with a keeper. He left his father's sheep with a keeper, those few sheep. He went to his brethren and talked with them in verse 22. He risked his life to protect the sheep like he talks about in verse 34. So I ask you this morning, youth, are you fully trustworthy with family responsibility now? Are you fully trustworthy with family responsibility now? Whatever your responsibilities are now. David was fully trustworthy right where he was at. Those few sheep. Work responsibilities, whatever they are you fully trustworthy with that? This was a choice. David chose to be fully trustworthy. The choice to be in the battle for right, I also noticed that David didn't let others' attitudes and actions keep him from being committed to fearlessly identifying with the real cause. So in verse 24, he got out there. He saw what was happening. He heard what the Philistines said. He saw what the men of Israel, how scared they were. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. He saw this. Now, what would be the normal thing to do? Join that. Join that. If everyone walked out of here this morning, you'd all walk out, right? I mean, we'd join normally. But David didn't join it. Why? I asked the question, why? This was a serious difference. He didn't join these men who were afraid. Why? Because he had personal convictions that the God of Israel could take care of him. And that God's name was being defied. And even though these other men were afraid, he wasn't pointing fingers at them. But he knew where he was going to stand that day. Dear ones, we need that kind of conviction today in the lives of our youth, in the lives of our adults, every one of us. God has to get a hold of our hearts, or we will not have homes that are dedicated to Him. We will not have youth that are dedicated to Him. We will not have a church that can be the light that He wants us to be in this world. Youth today, does borderline music sway you? Take a stand. Is an appealing app that tries to lead you astray still on your phone? Make a choice. Deal with it. Do you think it's okay to just shake a fellow youth's hand at church, or do you practice the holy kiss? There's a choice. There's a scriptural principle at stake. It's not just maybe. There's 5 commands in Scripture. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Will you pursue modesty, even if it's going to cause some others to scoff what you're wearing? What are you basing your choices on? Is it truth? Is it conviction tied to truth? Or is it what others are doing? Strictly what others are doing. The choice to be in the battle for right must be made by each one of us personally. And the blessing of God goes with us when we choose His path. That's all through the story. The blessing of God was poured. We want the blessing of God. I know every one of us here wants the blessing of God, but we struggle in our flesh to identify with the God of Israel at times. Even this preacher does. So I preach to myself. Secondly, this morning I want to think about the challenge of the battle. And I have 3 main points that are age-old points. 3 S's. Notice in this story that David surrendered to God's allowed circumstances or God's will for his life. He surrendered. He went from playing the harp for King Saul to going out there and taking care of those sheep out there in the wilderness. Those few sheep, as his brother calls it. Those few sheep out in the wilderness. What a lowly position. But he surrendered. Why hadn't Saul? He could have been saying this. Why hasn't Saul called me to go to war yet? And he could have been all in a tither over that. But no, he was out there taking care of the sheep, and he was doing it to the best of his ability. Why did he have to be a lowly shepherd boy? Why did his brother have to accuse him wrongly when he was just doing as told in verse 28? Why did he have to be the youngest of 8 boys? You know, always be the baby of the family, huh? Why did he have to be the youngest of 8 boys? Why did he have to have an old dad? And, you know, does his dad really understand him? Why did he have to have an old dad? It says his dad was old. It says right here in the story. Why couldn't he have been born in a better family? He didn't pick his last name, neither do we today. We don't pick our last name. That comes by birth. Why couldn't he have been born in a different tribe? Why couldn't he have been the king's son? You know, you can put the list of all these things there. But every one of us has to come to grips with this thing of surrender to the circumstances, to the place that God, whatever God allows in our life. We have to come to surrender with that. And then later on, if you go forward in the scriptures in David's life, he could have been saying, why does my father-in-law have to treat me so unfairly when I'm living right? And he went through a whole time there, chased by his father-in-law, kept out of Israel, as it were, unfairly treated totally. But he responded right even in that, and I'm amazed. Why? He surrendered to God's will for his life. The second challenge of this battle is self-denial. Self-denial when others live selfishly and seemingly get by. You know, David could have looked on at other shepherd boys, and a lion came out against their sheep, and they left it. Well, we're leaving. They left it alone. A bear came out. We're leaving. We don't care about that sheep. We care about ourselves. But David had, he didn't try to protect himself here in this story by fleeing from Goliath. He faced the great danger for the sake of what? For the sake of God's glorious name to be exalted that day. And this enemy to be defied because of what they were doing. But even after a great accomplishment that day, going out with a sling, killing the giant with all the armor and even an armor bearer in front of him, David humbly responds, and I want to read that right there in the close. Saul said unto him in verse 58, "Whose son art thou, thou young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of thy servant Jesse the Bethlehemite." I am the son of thy servant, Jesse the Bethlehemite. David lived humbly in spite of his accomplishments. That was part of self-denial. And the third one I want to point out is submission to authority figures. The challenge of the battle. So David surrendered to where God had placed him. He chose self-denial when others were protecting themselves. He was willing to deny himself. And he chose submission to authority figures. He respected his father's command by obeying promptly. He did the job assigned to him in keeping the sheep. He valued God's authority and claim on God's authority and claim on his life. He lived in the will of God. Dear youth today, I know every youth struggles with this at some point, because all of us do. I don't care if you're young or old. There's points in our life we can struggle with submitting to authority. But I want us to realize there's a blessing in that. God's blessing. God's blessing was on David because he was willing to face that challenge, go back home, serve his father, obey his father, go out, deal with the things that came in the way there, and continue to submit to the authority figures in his life. And so, youth, I ask you, will you serve your family? Will you serve your church? Will you serve your boss? And will you serve the God of heaven most of all in terms of all that? And will you hold God's name in reverence? By surrender, by self-denial, and by submission. This is how we hold God's name in reverence. In word, in daily actions, in purity. And Paul says over there in 2 Timothy, "Flee also youthful lusts, but follow what? Follow righteousness, faith, charity, peace with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart." So blessed as I think of that. I want to hasten on to the commander of this battle. Who and what did David see clearly? And so this morning I must ask you a question. What is your view of God? Youth, what is your view of God? Who did David see clearly in this passage? The God of Israel. Why did he see him so clearly? Why did he believe he would deliver him? Why was he totally trusting in God? Well, his God was alive. Verse 26. What does he say? "What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of who? The living God." His God was alive. Verse 36, he says the same thing. "The armies of the living God." So that was David's view of God. My God's alive. He's not someone I can't see. Even though I can't see him as such, I know he's there. He's alive. He's been with me in the past. His God was a personal deliverer, as he talks about in verse 37. "The Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear." Oh, I thought this was David's wits. No. This was David's God. the Lord that delivered me. His God was a personal deliverer. In verse 37, he goes on and says, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. His God was greater than Goliath. That's so great. That's so special. If God be for us, who can be against us? Though the world comes on with the pressures of all that technology presents, dear youth today, our God is able to deliver us when we trust in him. His God was the Lord of hosts, he says in verse 45. I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, he says to Goliath. I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts. His God was able to give them the victory over the enemy, verse 47. All this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. He will give you into our hands. What a vision. What faith. What purpose of heart. What fearless commitment. What undaunted courage. Today, the righteous are mocked. The church is mocked at times. The righteous are called fools. The world despises a praying saint. And the youth that live for God are thought to be strange. But, dear ones, God's kingdom will be victorious. Eternal victory is for the saints. It is. Eternal victory is for the saints. Proverbs 3, 5 and 6. Verse we need to have in our hearts. Trust in the Lord with what? With all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him. Give him a right in the choices of your life. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil, he says, verse 7 as well. I just love David's view of his commander. And I want that in my own heart. I want that kind of faith in my own heart. Lastly, I'd like to look at the cause for the battle. For David, this meant Israel needed a brave soldier. Yeah. Israel needed a brave soldier. God's name needed lifted high. This enemy needed to be overcome. Why? Because principles of right and wrong were at stake. Others needed help and encouragement. These men that were fearful, they needed help and encouragement. Israel needed to win this battle, or else they would be servants to the Philistines. And so, youth, I'm going to ask you some questions. What can you do for your home, for the church, and for God's kingdom today? If God calls you to courtship, God has some things to say about that. Live a pure life. In your courtship standards, identify with God. In the songs you listen to, do they pass the Philippians 4:8 test? They need to. Whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. They need to pass that test. In the books you read, they need to pass that test. In the podcasts you listen to, they need to pass that test. In the internet usage that you do on your phone, it needs to pass that test. It's not my test, it's God's. We're talking today about what we can do for God's kingdom in order to identify with it, in order to shout for the battle, in order to rally around truth. There's some stakes we have to put in on these things. Yes, and it doesn't mean that you have to just simply abide by some rules of some church. You know what? There's a lot of freedom in serving God. And when you serve God, the few rules that are there in the book probably are only a little bit of a stepping stone towards the right way. There's freedom in that. Dear youth, you can have a pure courtship. I testify to that today. I thank God for his mercy in that. We want to be an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in faith, and purity. What can you do today? Take your present responsibilities seriously. Do your work faithfully. Be on time. Keep commitments. This all plays into the factor of your life and what it represents, who it represents. Find joy in serving. Wherever God gives you the opportunity to serve today, find joy in serving. Washing the dishes, ironing the clothes, whatever. Over whatever God gives you opportunity to do today, find joy in serving. God gets glory out of a cup of water given in his name. God gets glory when you stop and help the man with a flat tire, whatever. But even in your regular work, the regular work you do, you either do it as unto the Lord, or you do it just because it's a job. There's a difference. There's a difference. Find joy in serving wherever God gives you the opportunity. Work with a smile. Live out your faith in God daily. Develop personal convictions by Bible study. Honor your parents, no matter how many flaws they seem to have. God notices this. You know, if you think you wish you were placed in a home that's like a perfect home, there's no perfect home. We're all human. We have all made mistakes. But the difference between the righteous home and the other is the righteous man falleth down and riseth up again because of who he's following, through confession, through whatever's needed. He rises up and follows again. But honor your parents. They're a gift from God to you. Don't ever think you're too old or too big or become too proud to say, I'm sorry. That's hard. Sometimes it's really hard. We think we're just too old or too big or we're just too proud. I'm sorry. You know, it wasn't long ago I had to tell my wife, I'm sorry. I didn't get so big and so old that I didn't have to. Learn to appreciate what others are doing. Thank your parents for all they do for you. Thank your mom for another good meal, clean clothes. When I go to a house and I don't hear thanksgivings for the meal, my heart, that bothers me. That really bothers me. There needs to be thanksgiving at a meal. In fact, I remember a home I was in years ago and always counted amazing. I walked in that home, and when we sat down at the table, before we ate, they all thanked their mother for the meal. And I thought, wow, this is different. And then at the end of the meal, they thanked her again. Well, I'd rather see that than nothing at all. I felt that was very, very commendable. Learn to appreciate what others are doing. Yeah. Be a regular attender and careful listener at your church services. Why shouldn't you? Why shouldn't you? If you identify with God, if you identify with God's kingdom, why shouldn't you be a regular attender and a careful listener at church services? And why shouldn't you support outreach activities? And why shouldn't you support summer Bible schools or nursing home singing or tract distribution or cottage meeting, whatever you have on your list as your local fellowship? Why wouldn't you want to be there? There has to be a good reason not to be there. It needs to be you're sick or something like that. I'm bothered in this day in which we're living how easy it is for us to somehow think we don't need even be at church on a Wednesday night. There's something wrong. There needs to be a fire of God grip our hearts and change us. There's a cause. There's a kingdom. There's a verse that says, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is. It even speaks on the subject. And yet we struggle sometimes. And in my heart, you know, well, maybe it'd just be nice to be home relaxing tonight. And I have to crucify that thought. Lastly, I want to challenge you with this, youth. Any of you looking forward to homes of your own, you need to develop the ability to feed your own soul well if you want to be a good parent, a good school teacher, or Sunday school teacher. Did you catch that? You need to develop the ability to feed your soul well. Because when you're given responsibility and you have to feed other souls and you have to point others in the right direction, if you haven't found the source of life in God yourself, you're going to fail in that responsibility. I want to leave that with you. Because I believe that's at the crux of this whole thing. David had learned to feed his soul well. And David went to battle that battle today because he had fed his soul well. He trusted in God. The Lord was his shepherd. And he went out there and he went against Goliath and won a great victory and rallied the men of Israel. They went out and slew a whole bunch of them. A great victory was obtained. The choice is yours. The challenge is there. The commander is still here. The cause is still worthy. Will we rally to that cause? Shall we kneel in prayer?